accession number 11440, reel 9.
Mr. Walter Hare, reel 10. You were telling us about the situation at Moyenville on roughly the 28th of March.
Yes.
The Germans were attacking.
So it's wave after wave. Mostly machine gun and rifle fire. There's no heavy stuff there. But our biggest problem was they got round our flank. There was a farmer on the left-hand flank of this... sunken road, and they got machine guns in there, and we couldn't understand how they'd managed to do that, because we thought there was a guards battalion on our left, and we knew guards weren't famous for retiring, and if they'd been told to stay, they would have stayed. But there was quite a few machine guns there, and they were firing now into our backs down this road.
And they were enfilading you then? Probably.
Enfilading, yes.
Did you have any cover at your back at all?
No cover in our back at all. Only what we dug into the embankment, that was the only cover we had, so I kept well in there. And anyway, the sergeant major said to me, "We can't stay here." As far as we could see, there was nobody left alive down that road. He said, we'll have to retire, we'll have to get back. So he said, after the next burst of machine, they kept bursting machine gun fire, see, down the road. He said, now, after the next burst of machine gun fire, we'll dash for it. And there was a burst of fire, and the sergeant major ran, and I saw him fall down in the field behind us.
Why hadn't you gone with him? I mean...
I don't know. I thought I'd let him, maybe he wasn't quick enough off the mark, but he ran and I didn't. I stayed where I was, and I thought I'd make the next rush, you see. It was better if you could move one at a time, because, he went, and I saw him go down, so I thought...
Was he hit? Did you see him hit?
I didn't see him hit, I just saw him go fall down. So I thought, I'd better wait until it's a bit darker. And then I'll try to get away. But I was too late. By that time, they were around us. They surrounded us. And they were coming from behind. They got round both flanks. And I was surprised to see about... they'd been told that my brother had been killed. I told you about this. 2 days before, they told me that he'd been killed as we retired. So I thought, well, I'm on my own now. But I was surprised when... Eventually, there was about 30 of our chaps... go forward with their hands up in the air, but more surprised, my brother was among them. I couldn't believe it. Anyway.
How exactly were you captured? What happened?
They were just round behind, and the German was coming for me with his bayonet. They just came round behind us. There were Germans in front, and Germans at the side, and Germans behind.
So what did you do?
Well, I put my hands up and dropped my gun. That's all you can do in a case like that. So they moved us back, these Germans. By this time, they'd occupied that road. They were moving. There were so many of them. And we could see wave after wave, far enough, coming forward, you see. We thought we could never stop them. But they moved us back, and we went past the first line. And they were laid out in this field, in that field in front of the sunken road. And we got through them, and then they waved us further back. And eventually, I think it was a German NCO took over us, and he took us back. I think there were about 40 of us left out of the battalion. And he took us back to over the brow of the hill to a quarry that was in this, was there. And then an officer, he got hold of an officer, and they talked a bit, and... we couldn't tell what they said. They were speaking in German, of course. And you could see they were studying something. And I said to my brother, I said, they're wondering whether to kill us now or shoot us now or sometime later. And I thought they were going to shoot us. But however, later on, I think it was a sergeant took us over and he marched us back. We went a mile or two back, and we took us to a wire cage. Villas, I think it was. There were a real mixed bag in there. All sorts of units had got mixed up. There'd be hundreds of us, and it was muddy, filthy.
Anyway. Before that, I believe in your notes you say they took your field dressings off you.
Oh, yes, they did. That was the first thing. They were very, very short of dressings, evidently. They had some sort of paper stuff, you see. And ours were real cotton and linen, whatever it was. Yeah, and so the first thing, they knew exactly, we had them in a sort of in our tunic, just inside our tunic. It was a little pocket thing, and you had them in there. And they knew exactly where to come. And the first chap that got hold of me, before I got to this guy, he ripped me tunic open and got this. But I forgot to tell you, on that sunken road, where it was the first day, I thought, I'll get myself changed into my trousers. And that was when I found out there were riding breeches. So all the time I was in Germany, I had a pair of riding breeches that had been made for a guardsman. But I did find them useful. There were new ones, and they were good. They were better than the trousers I'd had. You see, and they weren't in pieces.
You were in this wire cage.
Yeah.
Did you have any shelter at all?
No, nothing at all. We laid on the ground. When we could sleep, we tried to sleep, but we didn't get much. And each night, of course, there were some of the poor chaps. Couldn't stand it. They died of exposure, and you see, they gave us nothing to eat for 3 days.
What was the weather like?
Still raining and wet, sodden. And we tried to dig ourselves a little sort of grove in the ground, but it soon filled with water, so you thought you were better on top. And my brother and I used to try to keep together. And I remember one night I put my hand out to him. I walked up and put my hand out and felt at him, and he felt dead cold. And I spoke to him and never answered. I thought, oh, he's died during the night, because we'd seen a few die, you see. But however, next morning he was all right. He'd been fast asleep. But the guard used to come in on a morning and pick the look around to see if there was any who died during the night, pick them up, take them out. And they dug a long sort of trench at the side of the wire cage. And each morning the dead were thrown in there. Now, they never taken our name or number, so they didn't know we were. And I think I could take the people to this place near the farm, where there's a lot of men with unknown graves. They were just thrown in, a bit more soil on top of them. I don't know how many we lost there, but quite a few, because a lot of them weren't in very good condition. They couldn't stand it. Well, then after three...
You said you didn't get any food for 3 days.
3 days. And then we'd already had... We'd had food. They hadn't brought us in. We'd had to use our iron rations on the sunken road.
So you'd been short of food before that, really?
We'd been short, yes, yes.
What was the food when they eventually brought it?
Were 3 days, and then one night they said there was some soup. And it was warm, and it was wet. And that was all you could say about it. We called it cabbage water, and I thought there was no meat or anything. It really was some sort of... I drew my first soup in my steel helmet, because I had the cap. And I drank it like a dog would have drunk out of its... steel helmet. And I never had I threw that away then. And I never had a cup or anything of the rest of the time I was in Germany.
Did you get anything else besides the soup?
Nothing else, just the soup.
And
then the next morning, they told us we were going working. A working party, some of us. And we were given a small piece of bread. And that was our day's ration. And we were going to have soup when they came home at night. And we were marched off. I was working on a railway. There were at Roma, a place called Roma Court. They were repairing this line as they were moving forward, trying to get it going, and some of the chaps were working on roads, repairing roads and that sort of thing. In fact, some of them were wounded and some were killed with our own shell fire. I'd been under shell fire, but I never was unfortunate enough to be near one exploded. But we worked under shell fire from our own guns.
And what exactly were you doing for, you know, on the lane, the railway?
Repairing the permanent way, the wagons of ashes and stuff, you see, and we were building the permanent way up. And the other, their engineers were laying lines down as well. And eventually they got trained up to work on it and see it was all right, you see.
Were you guarded during your work?
Yes, there were guards with us all the time, with loaded rifles.
And we worked hard, I mean...
Oh yes, they were keeping at us all the time, yes.
And what did they do if you didn't work as hard as they wanted?
Just bash you with something. Button of a rifle. In fact, as we went to Roman Court, there was a little stream at the side of the road, and I noticed as we went past, there was some watercress growing. We'd been out in the country, and we had watercress. We had a little stream where I lived, near the side of the river. We ran into the wharf, actually. And I loved watercress, I thought, and it was eatable. And I thought, right, I'll get... We just straggled back. There were maybe 50 or 60 of us, you see, with guards. And I thought, now, as we come back, I'll keep to that side where this little stream is, and I'll grab some of that watercress as we pass. Yeah. So, that particular day, I got to the left-hand side near this stream, and we got to where this... I knew this watercress was. I just ran across to the stream and grabbed a handful of watercress. And the next thing, there was a butt of a rifle into my back, and I was in the stream. German shot on me, ran after me, just butted me like that, and I was absolutely wet through to the skin. I didn't get me watercress, but I got wet through. And there was nowhere to dry yourself, you just had to dry your clothes on you, you see.
It sounds like the guards were pretty cruel in
this. Brutal. Yes, they were brutal. But
how long were you in the... So you'd have just bread in the morning?
Bread in the morning and cabbage water soup at night.
The soup, cabbage water, did it improve at all?
No, never got any better. It was still made of vegetables, it would... Yes, it was warm, though, and it was drinkable.
Now, how long were you on that regime?
6 weeks.
You must have lost weight.
Oh, I was gradually getting down, yes, yes, I was.
What had you been when you were captured, roughly?
Oh, about 8 stone 9 or 10, I think.
And after 5 or 6 weeks of this?
Yes. I eventually got down to 7 stone.
Is there anything else you remember about that camp there?
No, after we'd been there about 4 weeks... I think they got some wood for us, and we tried to build ourselves some little shelter so that we were... But the weather was getting a bit better then. It had stopped raining, and it was getting a bit warmer, so we were a bit better off. And so we did try to make ourselves little wooden shelters a bit.
You hadn't had any wood for a fire or anything like
that? No. Oh, we never had a fire, no. No, we no cover of any sort, and no, we slept on the ground all the time.
And how many of the... Were they in this cage at Rome?
Oh, there'd be 200 or 300, I should think.
And how many of those would die, roughly?
Oh, I don't know. I would say maybe half a dozen or so. I saw around me. There'd be more, of course. You couldn't...
So it's difficult to judge, but you saw half a dozen.
I'd say at least half a dozen, yes.
What happened after the 5 or 6 weeks, then?
Oh, well, one day, the master's down to this railway, as usual, and when he got there was a train there with some cattle trucks on. And they put us into these cattle trucks and moved us off. We didn't know where we were going. We travelled quite a bit during the day. And we finished up at a big railway head where there was a lot of trains and things. I found out later it was Valenciennes in Belgium.
What was the journey like?
We were packed in like sardines in this cattle truck. It was supposed to be for 40 Huns and 8 horses, I think it was. But I think there'd be at least 60 of us packed in this horse box.
What about food?
We didn't have any. We'd had our bit of bread at the morning, and we didn't get anything else.
What about latrine provision? I mean,
there weren't any. Until we got out, we went out in the field. There was guards with us all the time, of course, but when we got to luncheons, we stood about in groups, and there was another. Then we were marched off to another train, and there was proper carriages on that, but horse vans as well, cattle trucks, and we were put in them. And there was a sliding door, of course, and over the door there was a little bar, and there was a little hook. The bar went in and fastened, you see. The guards fastened you in. But there was a sergeant in with this van that I was in, and he said, I think, it was a gun chap, he says, look, he said, we need have that door fastened. He said, we'll arrange to have it, we'll have somebody to stop out. And open it. He says, when you hear the train move, he tells somebody, he says, when you hear the train, get underneath, so you can't be seen. When you hear the train, when the guards have locked it and gone, got back in the train, you get out and undo the locker. If we might get a chance to get away. Or we could see what there is to see. Which you did. So we had the door open all the time. We got fresh air as well, you see, and we see all the country. But we knew there was no... We couldn't escape when the train was going to... We didn't know where we could escape to either, you see, because...
So escape wasn't an option you considered seriously?
It wasn't, no. No, it wasn't, because we knew the Germans would have to still get through the German lines. As a matter of fact, when I was taken prisoner, the first thing I thought was, how can I get back to all my own men? But I realised there were so many Germans, you couldn't pull that. No, escape wasn't our main problem. The main problem was getting a bit of fresh air. And then when the train stopped, which it did, there were everything troops going home on leave. It was a leave train and various things. And when it stopped at certain calls on the line, somebody was detailed to get out and undo the do the fastening again and get underneath. So that the guards didn't know. And it was well organised. He was a gun sergeant and he had it all laid on. So we went all the way, and I think we kept stopping various stops where the troops on leave had soup, and we had soup with them. And it was a bit better than we'd been having, because it was more like soup. It was a nice tasted. It was the same as they would be getting, you see. So we thought, oh, we're all locked on our feet here. And the train stopped at Strasbourg, and we were all told to get out. So, I think that was the most disgraceful thing, that upset me more than anything. We were in a filthy condition because we'd never had a bath. We'd never been shaved. Our clothes were filthy. And the marchers on the streets of Strasbourg and told the people that we were prisoners, British prisoners just captured, and there was nothing we could do. And we got back, the marches around the town and
blah. What did the population do? I mean, you know, the German civilians.
Well, they just watched us. I think that, you know, they were lovely to see these English schwein hunts, they called
them. Did they shout?
I don't remember any of the shouting, no. But we felt so ashamed to think we were being showed as... Because we'd always prided ourselves in keeping ourselves as clean as possible, the British Army did. Smart as you could be. And to be trailed around like that in the condition we were in, I think that upset me more than any other thing. And still does. I still think about it, and I feel as though so ashamed. But however, we got back eventually on the train. We were talking them back, and it was my had been odd. I'd been detailed to be the one to undo the catch. So I slipped underneath the carriage. and there was a chap walking down the opposite platform, and he saw me. And he just stood, looked at me, laid underneath this here. And I just went, you know, said, keep your mouth shut. And he opened his eyes, he couldn't believe it. But he just had another look, and he walked on and left me. I couldn't give him the show away, you see. And when I heard the train start to get ready for moving, I jumped out, and they did the catch, and there was quite a few people on the platform shouted. But I was in by then, and the guards had a lookout, evidently, you see, but there were nothing, there was nobody inside, so we were all right. And the next stop was Mulheim. We stopped at Mulheim. And they took us all out there, and took us to a, I think it looked to me like an old brewery or something like that, because there was a lot of barrels there, half-cut beer barrels, filled with water, cold water. And we had our first bath there. We took our clothes off. They were putting there was a fumigator there. They were putting some steam ovens or something, and we got rid of the lice there. And then we had our wash in this cold water with nothing to die with. We walked naked into this room and picked our clothes up and walked round and got them on while they were still hot. But we felt cleaner. And then back into the... And away we went in the train again. And we finished up at Freiburg. And then we stayed a night at Freiburg, either standing or sitting. And then the next day they moved us on. I think we did about, maybe about 20 miles, I think it would be. We finished up a little place called Emmendingen. And they marched us across to a camp, just a small camp with two huts in it. But it was clean. There was taps. There was running water and basins. And we felt it was more like civilian life.
And how many of you were put into
120. There were 120 of us, 16 each hut. 16 each hut. And we found out we were there for a specific purpose, to work in a nearby factory.
come back to the fact, now you stayed here right through until the end of the war.
End of the war.
Can we just look at the sort of conditions you lived in?
Yeah.
What were the huts actually like?
Very good. They had wire beds, and we had a blanket with a palliasse. So we really felt as though we were treated more like human beings. And
were they like British barrack huts? You know, the sort of hut?
Yes, they were just like British, but yes. You saw that. I did.
I saw that. Yeah. We'll have a photocopy of your plan of the hut.
Yes.
In your file.
So
for people
yes.
To look at.
Yes.
And you had a separate wash house.
With a separate wash. Not a wash house. A trestle in the yard itself, in the compound, with taps on and basins, so we could get washed. And we got an issue of Cree siphon, war soap, which is more like pumice soap. There was no lather with it, and no razors, of course. I was never shaved all the time, but I was only young. I didn't have a very big beard, but some of them were in a bit of a mess. There were one chap, we never heard of safety razors, of course, in those days, most of us, with the old cutthroat business in the British Army. But he said they were made of lead because they were not sharp at all. But there was one chap with us, he had a Gillette, I think it was, safety razor. And we all had to have a look at this. We'd never seen anything like this before, a safety razor. But he only had one blade. And he did shave himself occasionally. But nobody else had a chance to have a check. We all said we'd like to borrow it. He said, no, thank you. And he wouldn't let anybody.
But so you weren't shaved, but you were able to keep clean, wash.
Oh, we would wash.
Did the lice reappear?
Pardon?
Did the lice reappear?
No, we didn't have them. In there, well, we were washed and clean all the time, and so Anyway.
What about the latrines? What were they?
Yes,
like?
We did. We'd pop latrines.
Earth
clotted. No, water flushed. So we felt as though we were much. In fact, I've always said the conditions there were much better. We felt as though there were. And we'd been a very small camp, but there's only 120 of us. It was a sub-city. My address was Stammlagerpatsch in Mecklenburg. Now, where Mecklenburg is, I don't know. And where Patsch is, I don't know. I never was there. But that was my address.
Now, what about the people in the camp? Were all 120 of you British?
We're all British, yes.
And your brother was still with you?
He was with us, yes.
Were any of the other lead pals
there? Oh, yes, there were a few of us. We were a mixed bag, but there were a few of our own our men to go with us.
Were you all other ranks?
Other ranks, yes.
No officers?
No.
Any NCOs?
No.
There weren't any NCOs either?
No, not of our NCOs, no.
Did you have any internal organisation in the camp, like a camp committee or a...
No, we'd nothing like that. We just did our work and then got back to... We used to do a bit of a sing-song at night, you know, in one of the huts, and the Germans would come and open the door and say, "Sings and Tommy, sings and..." And so we used... As soon as they said "sings and," we used to shut up and keep quiet. We weren't going to sing to orders.
What sort of things would you sing?
Oh, a little more about that mainly, because there were a lot of Yorkshire lads among us. And
so it wasn't at all, it wasn't like you didn't have
there were no facilities for anything, you see. And when you'd done your day's work, you'd had enough, you wanted rest.
So no sports?
No. Well, you weren't allowed out of the camp at all.
So. No, I mean within the compound?
Well, the one room. It was not a very big compound. You were allowed out for exercise. And every Sunday, there was a sergeant, a German sergeant in charge of the camp. He was a nasty piece of work, really. He was a disciplinarian. And every Sunday morning, the first Sunday morning we were there, he lined us up, two deep, to count us. Now, I think his main concern was that, you see, we could see the snow in the Alps of Switzerland not too far away, and I think he was afraid that somebody was going to escape and get away, and that was he was afraid of. So the first Sunday morning, he lined us up too deep, and he started to count us. Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf, sechs, sieben, knock, went like that. And the following Sunday morning, we realised that it was a Sunday morning. We didn't work on a Sunday, you see. We realised that he was going to count us again, so we arranged that when he got to about 22 or 3, one chap would move right a bit and one left a bit. And he got to somebody where there's nobody behind him, and he had a really fit. He thought he'd lost a man, and he started again. I strike, and he counted us again like that, you see. We get him to about 60 sub, and then he had the same thing had happened, and he looked, say, "Einemann, where's Einemann? Where's he gone? Where's this man gone to?" But then we realised that we were standing there where we needed to be. But we were all the time kidding them like that. And we had an interpreter with us, a Jew chap. He was an Englishman and spoke, had been captured, and he spoke very good German. So he told him what things, he interpreted it for us, what the orders were. And we said to him, "Well, why doesn't he line us up and let us number off like we did in the British Army?" And he said he wouldn't do that because he'd said you'd be doing it right, you see. So, and sometimes there was one hut where the spare bedding for anybody who was ill, a kranken hut, I think they call it, and. If we happened to be anybody who was not well, and it happened in the hut on the Sunday morning, he'd get to about, 115 of us, and then he would say, "Try Simon, where is Simon? Where are these three?" You see, and we used to keep him, but then we used to say, "Einemann Kranken." And then he'd still lost two, and he'd count us again, and we used to say, "Try Kusch." Two in the couch, in the kitchen. We always did that sort of thing. We got at them where we could, pulled the legs in and did as much that sort of thing as we could.
Now, you were close to the Swiss border. Was there any question of escape You know, was there an escape committee like that or anything like that?
We'd been warned that if anybody tried to escape, they'd be shot. And we said, they told us that there was guards on the Swiss frontier, and they had the instructions to shoot anybody that they saw trying to escape. So they said it was just no good. We hadn't entered. You see, all the time they were trying to telling us this, but we two chaps got away. They got out away somewhere, but they told us that they'd been shot. Whether they had or not, I can't tell you.
Do you know how they got away?
I don't know. No.
So, people didn't think of escape. They were put off.
No.
Most people, I mean.
Yes, they were, yes. Though I never thought of escaping. Not while I were there.
How was the camp guarded then? Was this?
There were guards on all the time with loaded rifles.
About how many?
Oh, two or three. All the time. There were always guards to take us.